Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. Well, we are going to be exploring one of my favorite subjects, and that is monsters of the Pacific Northwest. Now, as I'm looking out of my studio window here, I am just watching hummingbirds. I'm seeing beautiful woodpeckers coming through the trees. It is just absolutely wonderful. But my guest today has done research. His name is Michael Newton. And he has a book called The Strange Monsters of the Pacific Northwest that educated me, well, in a way that I never dreamed that there were so many weird critters and stories that are recorded about these strange creatures in the Pacific Northwest. Michael, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Michael, you have got... My goodness, I've never known anyone that's published 232 books, for heaven's sakes.
I mean, well, it's far from a world record, but it's all I do since 1986, and I've been writing since 1977, so they pile up.
My word. I had a very dear friend that had, before he passed away, I think he reached 100, and I thought, how in the world do you ever have the time? But that's all he did. That was his work. That's what he did.
Well, same here. I think the record is something like is over 1,000 for some ancient Chinese author, but
holy
I couldn't
Moses.
Quote you an exact number.
Jeez,
and I'm not sure how long his books were either. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, it could have been, 500
might have been
pages
pamphlets
each.
Or something.
Who knows? Who knows? Michael, you have been involved in so much research and study. In a million years, did you ever think this is what you were going to end up doing? Traveling and researching all of this weird stuff?
Well, I've been fascinated by unknown creatures and what they call cryptozoology since I was a small child, probably 7 or 8 years old, reading stories about the Yeti and the Loch Ness Monster in one of the old Cub Scout magazines that I used to get, and it just sort of stuck with me. I've been collecting clippings and magazine articles all my life, and now, of course, the Internet, it's a whole new universe of research.
Absolutely. You must have floor-to-ceiling books.
Well, I have quite a few, yeah. I probably have several thousand books I use for research, and then I have the vanity case where I stash my own.
Yes, I can totally relate because I do the same thing. And with all the people I interview, I mean, it's just amazing what's out there. And so many people with their different perspectives and areas of expertise and knowledge, and to be able to access that is just incredible. And like you said, the Internet has really opened up wonderful opportunity for people like yourself and the average individual like me. I really like the way you opened up your book. You said nearly 200 years ago in 1812, there was a French naturalist, Georges Cuvier. I may not be pronouncing that correctly. He was born in 1769, died in 1832, and he made the statement that the great days of zoological discovery were done. My goodness, we have people still doing that today. Well, we've discovered it all, and we're far from it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he was definitely premature on his statement and was proved wrong on several counts before he died, and then today, there's no real solid estimate of how many species may remain undiscovered. Some people believe they're dying off faster than we can find them.
Well, that's a very interesting perspective. I have my own perspective because I think that creatures have a way sometimes of finding hiding places so that they won't be destroyed. And there's a lot of places on this planet that are underwater we just haven't a clue about, and above the ground as well. There's a lot of places that can harbor creatures that we wouldn't even imagine. I was surprised when I read that in June 2003, scientists aboard a research vessel, the Tangaroa, reported they had found 400 new species. in a 4-week survey off of New Zealand.
Oh, yes, and it goes on. It's going on today. We really know less about what's under the sea than we do about what's on the surface of the moon or Mars.
Well, I was just amazed. I mean, for them to even be able to count 400, to me, was astonishing.
Well, and then I think they ran out of time and money and had to go home, or they'd probably have found many more if they could stay indefinitely.
What?
Most of those are small, of course, but then you have some discovery like the Megamouth shark, which was completely unknown until 1976, and it's only been within the last 2 or 3 years that we've actually seen a giant squid alive.
That's true. That is true, and that's because of technology.
Right.
We've been able to go down into depths and be able to film things that we never could even get close to a few years ago.
Absolutely. I have high hopes, especially for the sea. But then even, you know, up where you are, the densest forests, anybody that says they've been well explored by people on foot is out of his mind.
I would concur. Because if anybody's ever been in a forest, it's very, very easy, one, to get disoriented. And two, there are so many places to hide. It's not funny.
I have trouble getting back from the bottom end of my 6 acres, so you can imagine trying to hike through Washington State and claim that there couldn't be an ape or something out there. You know, it's almost laughable.
Well, before we get into Bigfoot, which is a good portion of your book, I want to talk about some of the odd things. Now, you covered both Oregon and Washington, because that's the Pacific Northwest. But give us
depending on who does the estimate. Some people throw in Idaho, but I had a word length limit on the book, and they set the parameters.
Mm-hmm. Give us a little bit of background history about how the Pacific Northwest was established. Lewis and Clark were very much involved with this. Thomas Jefferson.
Well, absolutely, sent out by Thomas Jefferson to explore, and Jefferson himself said that he thought the territory, well, from the Louisiana Purchase on westward, might contain any number of large unknown animals. He referred to mammoths at one point. He predicted that lions might be found, and I think he was speaking more of African-type lions than the already well-known cougar. And Lewis and Clark, of course, came back with some strange stories of their own. No definite sightings of any particular monsters, but they accumulated many Native American traditions of forest spirits and giants and so forth.
Oh, yes, and they just abound. And you don't discount those stories, because these are people that have lived for centuries in this environment. And so many times people have a bad habit of saying, oh, that's just myth, that doesn't work. Wait a minute, something has happened where there is substance behind whatever the story may be, and there's often some fascinating facts. And that's what you found. But I was amazed. I had no idea that in 1913 there was a mountain beaver that was captured, and it wasn't a beaver or a mountain dweller. It was the most primitive rodent.
Right. I'm not sure exactly why they called it a beaver, but yeah, I believe it remains the most primitive rodent, living rodent, known on Earth.
So it's we still have some?
I believe so, yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, now this is going back a while since I wrote this, but I think it also, on that, I believe they found the largest known flea.
Yes, and I began to itch when I read
that.
That one really got me. How big is that thing? It's huge, but it only lives on one creature.
Exactly, so you're safe. It's not going to come in on your cat some night.
How big is that flea?
Well, let me try and recollect here. It's
about,
I think,
a half
something
inch
like
long.
A half inch long or something of that nature.
Can
it's,
you?
You know, compared to the normal flea, it's huge.
I mean, that is great. Well, and then I really got excited when I found out that there were about 4,000 plus species of spiders, and I went, woohoo! That really makes my day. My goodness.
Well, they're everywhere. I think they found spiders everywhere except Antarctica. So even, you know, like up in the Himalayas, they'll find little spiders up on the highest peaks. They're everywhere, as they say.
Absolutely. And they really serve a very valuable part of the natural environment. But I had no idea that there were over 4,000, but closer to 15,000, that they have discovered that there was that much variety in the species. And every one of them have a part of the insect chain that they feed on.
Absolutely. And if no spiders existed, which I know would make some people probably ecstatic, we'd be overrun with crickets and roaches and everything else you can name that spiders make it part of their daily diet.
Now,
I mean, worse than we are now.
Oh, yeah, and it's just amazing. But I have observed many times webs, and of course, during the year here in the Pacific Northwest, you've got to take your broom out and knock down webs. Those things are tough to get down.
They can be. I know during World War II they used Black Widow silk for bomb sites on American and British planes.
It's absolutely incredibly strong. It's amazing. So sometimes just studying these things just makes us appreciate how Mother Nature has created a patterning of adaptation. But what another component that you had in your book, you've got a photo of a young woman who was holding a red piranha. And I thought, this is no small piranha. This is a huge thing. And it was found down in Oregon.
Yes, I don't think they're actually believed to be breeding there, but although many states have outlawed possession of them now, they still float around, no pun intended, in the pet trade, and many people will buy one or two, and then they have a bad experience with them, or they get tired of trying to keep them fed, and they'll go out and toss them in the nearest pond or stream, and they've been caught by fishermen from coast to coast at various times.
That's incredible to me. I would think that these waters would be so cold for them because my awareness is that they were happy as they could be down in South America.
Absolutely, their natural habitat, and I don't think anyone expects them to live very long in Oregon or Washington, certainly not in the winter. I don't believe they could survive in a frozen lake, for example, but they give you second thoughts about skinny dipping in the Everglades.
Mm-hmm. No kidding. It really makes you think. Now, I was watching a program on television just two nights ago. My husband had turned it on, and it was on the History Channel, and it was about crocodiles in the sewers of New York.
Oh, right.
And just extensive. And I can remember reading about that when I was a little girl, how people in New York, guys working underground, they went and smashed through a concrete wall, and here were all of these happy little crocodiles, or alligators, I should say, that were there, which they weren't expected. But this is something that is real. They do survive in that environment. But
yep, it's widely dismissed by some you know, debunkers as an urban myth, but specimens have actually been caught, and some of them have been up, you know, 3, 4, 5 feet long.
Oh, yes. They had one that they caught that was 8 feet long. Doesn't that make you happy to go trucking through a sewer? I mean,
well, another reason to be glad that I'm not working down there. One of several reasons.
Absolutely. But you found that here in the Pacific Northwest, we had something called crocodilians. Now, this is something you wouldn't think they would be able to survive, but there have been those that have been found, and they usually escaped from people, like you were talking about the piranhas. They have escaped from people that have owned them. But I was amazed that we have all, not just that, but the Nile monitor.
Oh, yes, yeah, another lizard that's been imported, you know, for exotic pet trade. They actually have breeding colonies of them now in Florida, and again, you're not likely to find that they'd live year-round in the Pacific Northwest, but just about anything that can be turned loose will crop up somewhere in the U.S. They have Burmese pythons breeding in Florida. People have caught king cobras down there, and
in
any place that a responsible pet owner can throw something out, you know, it'll be eventually pop up again.
And that down there, you've got warm weather, you've got warmer waters, so just about anything can make it, and they usually become huge.
Yeah, they have iguanas breeding down there, several different species of monkeys and so forth. And a lot of these things, especially the snakes, they think escaped during a couple of the big hurricanes going back to Hurricane Andrew in the early 1990s when houses were blown away. Maybe terrariums were knocked over and so on.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all. But if something like that happened here in the Pacific Northwest, I know when we first moved to the Pacific Northwest, every once in a while we'd see a little black garter snake in our backyard. But if they didn't find shelter, then they died because of the weather that we had here. They'd either drown.
Right, they should be hibernating over the winter up there.
Right, right. They have to find a place to hibernate. But we don't have poisonous snakes on the western side. On the eastern side, there's some, but not here on the west side, for which we are very grateful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just here, and you call them monsters. I didn't know we had feral hogs either. Now, we all know about feral cats, but feral hogs? Well, we've got them here in the Pacific Northwest, and they're nothing to fool around with.
No, the Department of Agriculture tries to plot their progress in spreading across the country, but they can be dangerous running in packs. I mean, they'll run right over you and attack you with their tusks, and some of them grow very large, as we saw with the so-called hogzillas down in Georgia and Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
They can be weighing several hundred pounds.
Well, I know whenever you go to the fairs, like the Puyallup Fair or any of the big fairs, country fairs, you find that the sows that they'll have that will be on display or other ones, because people will go in and compete, they're 600, 700, 800 pounds.
Yep.
And
some domestic pigs. Some domestic pigs have interbred with the feral hogs as well, and they think may have produced a larger, more robust species, which is nonetheless likely to attack you if you stumble on them in the woods.
Right. And when you think of the wild hogs that have been known in Europe and their tusks, and you talk about one in the book, that the tusk was just amazing. That was the one, I think, down in Georgia. Incredibly huge animal.
Yes, there was an estimate once that it weighed 1,000 pounds or more, and I think National Geographic finally sent someone down to unearth the remains, and they found that that was exaggerated by about 200 pounds. But still, an 800-pound hog running over you and hitting you with the tusks would be no small problem.
That's for sure. Well, I really was blown away by the giant Palouse earthworm. I had no idea. Jeez, that thing is 3 feet long or longer. I'd never heard of it.
Well, it's considered to be extremely rare. In fact, I think for a while they believed it was extinct, but they are still burrowing around there, and no harmful effects on people whatsoever. In fact, you might even like to have some in your garden, although they'd certainly startle you if you dug one up.
No kidding. I wonder if they're like a regular earthworm, that if you cut them, then they'll reproduce and heal themselves and go about doing double duty.
Oh. Now, that I don't know. I'm not
that
sure
would
anybody
be interesting.
Experimented on them with it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Okay, let's get to Bigfoot. I mean,
yeah.
Bigfoot is the big kahuna of the monsters here. Now, Bigfoot has a reputation throughout the world, and in Tibet especially. The Yeti,
yes,
is well known, has been known for centuries. The stories abound in the Himalayas about these creatures that every once in a while will come down, and they'll even kidnap somebody, and women usually, and take them off.
Right, that's the rumor, and there have been stories about that from Oregon and Washington, too, with some of the Native American tribes even claiming that a child was produced here and there. Of course, there's been no actual scientific documentation of it. But it's a long-standing tradition that when Bigfoot needs a girlfriend, you have to watch out.
Well, what is so fascinating to me is that whatever I have read, that these are intelligent creatures, I'll use that term, that have very human characteristics. They reek, they stink, you can smell them coming.
Right.
But up in the Himalayas, because it's so cold, and they have that environment, but even so, there is a particular odor that they notice. But you've got all kinds of information, and let's start with Oregon, because we've got them in Washington, we've got them in Oregon, but with all of our modern technology, I think one day we're going to be able to find one of them somewhere, but they really are pretty much reclusive.
They appear to be right now, well, actually in June, just last month, two reports have been circulating. One from California, some people were out looking for Bigfoot, and they claim they found a smudge on the window of their truck when they came back from a hike that sort of looked like somebody had rubbed their cheek against it, and there was also some hair stuck on there, and they're claiming that a DNA test from the hair came back as an unknown primate. And a similar test has been performed on some hair submitted by an anonymous guy who claims he shot two Bigfoots, but he hasn't produced the bodies. And, of course, we've all heard this kind of thing before. The guy's down in Georgia with the gorilla suit in their freezer trying to sell it for $100,000. And
right.
You never really know. But supposedly the DNA tests have been performed in both cases and came back as a near match to humans, but not quite. What that means, I couldn't tell you.
Well, if their territory is being infringed upon, not too many people are going to bother with the Himalayas, so they're pretty safe up there. But here in the Pacific Northwest, and we're not one of the more densely populated states in the nation, they have a lot of wooded area that they can
right.
go to. And then go from state to state, and with all of our mountains and various terrain, they are going to be pretty okay, but there are many areas now that are being encroached upon by development. And do you think this is one of the reasons why we're getting more and more reports, or do you think it's perhaps because their food supply is diminishing?
Well, I'm really not sure. Quite a number of the reports I was able to collect have been reported by motorists driving both day and night, and then another large number have been reported by hunters. But you also have a considerable number of reports of large ape-like creatures peering in windows at houses, rattling the doors, trying to get in, prowling in garages. I don't know if that's natural curiosity, or it could well be, as you say, the less wild habitat they have, just like coyotes in Los Angeles or on Hollywood Boulevard, you're going to run into them, theoretically.
Now, the first report that was on Bigfoot in Oregon was 150 years ago?
Approximately, yes. Well, of course, we don't know how far they literally go back with Native American traditions, but some of the earliest missionaries in the state recorded some of the reports from that area. And I think, let me see. Yes, certainly in the early 19th century.
What is the most incredible story, and you've got a number of them in your book, The Strange Monsters of the Pacific Northwest. In your mind's view, when you were doing this research, which story stood out the strongest about Oregon and then Washington?
Well, I've always been impressed by the individuals who claim that they got a close look, a really close look at Bigfoot or had some kind of personal interaction. Some of the claims that Bigfoot communicated with people telepathically. You have there the famous researcher Autumn Williams, whose family claims that during the early 1970s their cabin was visited regularly by more than one Sasquatch or Bigfoot, and that Autumn's mother felt she was actually getting silent communications by telepathy from these creatures, and she's written a whole book on the subject of communicating with them with her mind. Of course, that's very controversial, and a lot of people just dismiss it out of hand.
Well, obviously, she really feels like she's got something to share, and of course, telepathic communication, it's not that unusual. People do it all the time, but when it comes to making it producible at will, often they're not able to recognize that. But you've got all of these reports about what went on in Oregon. What about the state of Washington?
Well, Washington has just a few less Bigfoot reports on file up to the time I finished this book. I think Oregon was 1,400 and some odd cases, and Washington was over 1,200. So both states, you're right in Bigfoot Central, really. And if you throw in British Columbia and Northern California, you have the lion's share of reports nationwide, although I have to say that Bigfoot's been reported from every U.S. state except Hawaii, And that would be quite a swim for him, I guess.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea. It's even been up in Alaska?
Oh, yes. And there have been a couple of hundred sightings from Pennsylvania, well over 100, close to 200 in Florida. Anywhere you go, there are traditions of these kind of creatures. Usually, if they're not in woods like in the Northwest, then they'll be in swampland. Of course, you'll remember the famous series of films about the Boggy Creek monster down in Arkansas. And right across the map, they're reported many, over 100 sightings from Ohio.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, it's all through the state, and of course, you've got some of the other things in here, but Bigfoot is fascinating. You've got extensive research that you've done here on it, so it makes for a real interesting read. And then you talk about the Crypto Zoo. The Crypto Zoo.
What well, that's sort of a monsters? Grab bag of the creatures that I found didn't really fit into any of the previous chapters, and some of them are way out there, almost Twilight Zone type creatures.
Mm-hmm.
But they've still been reported, so I tried to give everybody equal time.
Well, you talk about a kangaroo man. You talk about the little people, and I think they, you know, people will see that just about everywhere. But you talk about giants among us. And a woman in northwestern Oregon, and she saw somebody that was extremely tall.
Yes, I believe that was Opal Church, and yep. They're driving along, and they see this very tall, pale-looking guy with, and his clothes appeared to be sort of otherworldly, as they said, some kind of metallic filaments or something, and really almost beyond their description. But then when they turned around, they were driving by, and when they turned around to go back and look, he's gone. So then it leaves the skeptics to say, oh, you hallucinated or you imagined it, or it was just some tall hitchhiker walking by and he ducked into the bushes, and who can really say?
And we've got a Beast of Bald Mountain. And folks, you're just going to have to get the book because it's got so many wonderful things. This would be a great book to share stuff with on Halloween. You'd always have something to talk about at a party. People wouldn't believe you, and they'd say, ah, but it's in Michael Newton's book. You're going to have to get the book to find out more. Michael, what's your website where people can find out more about your books?
It's www.michaelnewton.homestead.com.
Michael
and
Newton.
And I'm also on Facebook.
Okay, Michael Newton, and that's MichaelNewton.
Right, as all one word, and then okay. And then dot homestead, again, all one word.
.homestead.com.
Correct.
Yes, MichaelNewton.homestead.com. I'm telling you, this is so much fun when you can read material like this, have it documented, and have this tucked away in your conversational surprise packet and just blow people out of the water. They just go, where did you get this stuff? You're making it all up. You say, no, I'm not. I'm not making this up. It's on page 44 of this book. And Michael's got an abundance of them. I mean, anybody that can write as many books as he has, 232, you know you're going to find something you're interested in. So check
well,
it out. Go to
so,
Michael.
But...
MichaelNewton.com. Donna Sebo here. I know we're taking a break in just a minute. It's been a delight, Michael. Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge about, not all of it, just smidgens of it, because you've got buku. But it's just so much fun to talk about things like this. Whether it's
well, it's my
work,
pleasure.
And keep up the good work, and let me know when you come out with your next one.
It'll be Strange Pennsylvania Monsters coming out later this year.
Ooh, so for those of you in Pennsylvania, you've got some of those too, not just Bigfoot, but even more. This is Donna Sebo. Michael, thank you again for being my guest. MichaelNewton.homestead.com. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural, and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Ever since I was a kid, I have always loved things like Ripley's Believe It or Not, Medical Oddities, stories, fables. To me, that's what makes life so interesting. I dislike it intensely when people have an arrogance. It's like their mental noses are stuck up in the air and they go, well, this is the way it is. Well, that is the way it is. And you just go, excuse me, aren't you aware there's so much going on in life? And one of the gifts that reading gives you, whether you're reading magazines, you go to your library, when you go into topics that you have no use for, let's say in everyday life, maybe you've never been that interested in Bigfoot, but by golly, you learn about other creatures that are in the area. I've lived in the Pacific Northwest for years. I had no idea we had red piranhas that floated up in the waters here and other things. It's fun to learn how absolutely huge life is. Can you imagine being that exploration group in New Zealand, being on that boat, finding over 400 species of life that you didn't even know existed? That opens up a wonderful array of information that we just need to learn about. It's wonderful that we have people like the Michael Newtons and researchers and scientists, individuals that just love checking out things to find out what is different. And it's the same thing with cultures. When you start researching cultures, and too many times I think we get into our little zones thinking we're the know-it-alls, and we're far from it. Every culture in the world, every part of this earth has something unique and fascinating about it. People aren't the only things. But we have an advantage because we can learn about so much. And that should be exciting. And if you have kids, encourage them to be curious. Encourage them to go to museums to find out what was what we're aware of centuries before. Think of the arrogance of the guy that said, oh, we've discovered everything on this planet. That was almost a couple hundred years ago. Excuse me. We're far from it. However, people today still have that attitude. People today will say, go to space? What for? We got to take care of everything here. Well, I agree. There's a lot we don't know here. But do you realize how much that we today are able to enjoy because of the research that went on going into space? You see, everything links with everything else. And when people want to stay in ignorance, when you put yourself in a little box mentally with a holier-than-thou attitude, your world becomes very small. That's what the Dark Ages were all about. And that's something that really is a pet peeve of mine. When I hear people saying, oh, it's the good old days. Oh, yeah, really? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. They don't know enough about the good old days, and I guarantee you they wouldn't want to go back to the time when you had to dig a hole in the ground, and maybe you couldn't even do that, especially if it was frozen, just to be able to go to the bathroom. I don't think so. Be willing to learn. Be willing to explore. Every generation has something to give us in the way of wisdom and understanding. We have better health today because of technology to a degree, and also because of sanitation and having access to food. It wasn't that long ago in this country, the United States, people were starving to death. And some might say, well, they're starving today. I got news for you. Having been on the low end of the totem pole in my own life, I know what it is like to go hungry. But I can tell you, there is abundance of food in this country. But the thing is, we have to understand, we've got to learn, we've got to grow, and we can't get stuck in old modalities. Well, let's take our first caller for the day, and if you want to call in and chat with me, the number is 888-815-9756. Welcome, caller, to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. I'm Cindy. I'm calling from New York City. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Are the flowers out in abundance in New York City? That is a fabulous city to be in during the summer.
It is just beautiful here, yes. Lots of flowers, growth. The botanic gardens are thriving, so it's wonderful.
Oh,
yes.
New York City is, to me, just awesome. It's like a multitude of worlds within a very small space. Incredibly wonderful place. I just love to visit there. Well, let's get down to business with you, Cindy. First thing that I'm looking at with you is paperwork has to be gone through. There are some items that can be very easily misplaced that are important to you that you need to have in particular locations so you have easy access to them. And the first thing I'm getting is insurance papers. So I don't know what kind of insurance. I don't know if it's medical. I don't know if it's life insurance or health insurance. I just don't have a clue. But I am seeing something with insurance papers. Also, what I'm looking at is that you're going to be seriously thinking about relocating. And when I'm looking at the relocation, you don't seem to quite have things narrowed down. I want to say relax about this because you're going to find the appropriate place, you're going to find the right environment, and economically it's going to be comfortable for you. So I just want you to be patient. Don't be in a hurry.
Okay.
Because everything is going to fall into place, and I'm looking at what appears to be a two-level. I'll call it a townhouse. I could be wrong on this, but it looks like two levels. And I'm seeing you being able to look at more than one place that has a two-level structure to it. But I really find this one that has a very narrow stairway going up. I think you will be very dissatisfied with this place because of the angular structure of the stairway. And it will be uncomfortable. You can climb stairs. That's not the issue. It's going to be uncomfortable to live with over a period of time. So when you're looking at places, be aware of how the flow is. You don't want it constricted where you feel like you're almost in a tunnel going up these angularly designed stairways. So it's just a thought, and that's what I'm seeing in my head. What's on your mind, dear? What did you want to ask me today?
Oh, I guess I just wanted to. I've had a couple of really kind of stressful days, and I'm happy it's the end of the week, and I guess I just wanted to ask. It seems like it's already letting up, but I'm hoping it will continue to.
What is your stress all about, dear? I think, really, now let me say this before you answer the question. I really think you are very, very tired.
Yeah.
And I think that is where the stress has been accentuated. And you're right, it is abating. However, you need to honestly evaluate why your buttons were pushed the way they were to the degree they were pushed. And I think exhaustion has a lot to do with it. You know, you can be mentally exhausted, not necessarily physically, but mentally, and it just depletes your energy. So be aware of yourself and take care of yourself. Answer my question, though. What is the situation with the stress?
Oh, I think it's a little bit of family that I just dealt with, and just a little bit of job, you know, stuff that's come up this week in the job. It's a little of both, having visited my family that I don't see often and then coming back to a job stress and being tired. You're right. I think it all combined to sort of go, ooh, not so good.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. The family situation is going to be the way it is for a long period of time. You need to know that, whatever is going on. And there is someone in the family that is ill. And so there are going to be some issues about that. And what you need to remember is what you are able to help with, help. What you're not able to help with, don't sweat it. Don't get all anxious and think you've got to drop everything to take care of something that really you're not in a position to take care of. Other people are there to take care of that. So don't be so hard on yourself. And when it comes to the job, I really think that this is not something new that's come up on the job before. So you're going through a patterning. That's why I said you need to ask yourself, what is it that's really pushing your button? What's the core of this?
Okay.
Because you really can handle the stuff on job very easily.
Yeah, it's outside stuff and tired and all of that. But well, I appreciate it. I really do. I appreciate talking to you at any time I can.
Well, you're more than welcome, Cindy. You have a marvelous summer now.
All right, you too. Take
Thanks
care.
So much. You
right.
too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. If you want to give me a buzz, the telephone line to call into is 888-815-9756, and all I need is your first name or your initial. And then you just let me tell you what I see, and after that, you can ask me a question, if you like, about anything or anyone that you're interested in. Now, what I want to also let you know, those of you that are in Western Washington, two events coming up where I'm going to be speaking and also doing some demonstrations. In Lakewood, Washington, on July 26th, Tuesday evening, I'll be appearing at the Progressive Spiritual Center at 6:30 in the evening. Now, this is going to be a relaxing, informative, and interactive class type of environment, and it's really going to be, I think, just a joy to do. I love to do things like this. So there's a small fee of $10 at the front door. Then on the 30th, Saturday, I'm going to be participating with a group called the Ascension Foundation. We're going to be at the Best Western in Tukwila, and you can go to my website, find all about this, but this is a unique program because it's going to be from 10 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. There's going to be a group of vendors. There's people like myself. I'll be there with books and angels and all this kind of stuff, and I'll also be doing many consultations. But that is going to be free to the public. Yet in the evening, we're going to have another program from 6 o'clock until 10 in the evening. I'm going to be a VIP speaker that evening, and there is a fee of $35 for that particular program, and there will be some other mediumship demonstrations that will be going on as well. Now, if you want information on these two events, what I want you to do is go to my website, look up my newsletter. Actually, you'll see the information on my website. The events will be posted there on my calendar, but also then the newsletter. You will be able to see all of the details as well. So there's two places on my website. Then in August, now this is a very special event, I have free tickets for anyone who's listening that's in Western Washington or otherwise who has a chance to attend the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. That's the first three weekends in August. I have free tickets for the family. So give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604. The tickets are going fast. Or email me at Donna@DelphiInternational.com, Donna@Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com, and I'll get those tickets out to you. So I was given 20 free passes. We have less than 10. So please get to me as quickly as you can. I know this is July. Before you blink, it's going to be August. This is a wonderful family event. It's the first three weekends. I have a booth there, and we'll be giving you more information about that in a couple of weeks. So I look forward to seeing you there. But those free tickets, give me a buzz. We're going to be taking a break for just a minute, and we'll be coming back. More good things to share with you. And if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. This next week, we've got a wonderful lineup of people, and I want to let you know about it. We're going to have Lou Paradise on Monday. Now, Lou is a retired Marine. This man served in Vietnam and suffered severe nerve damage in his hands. He was part of medevac units. We're going to hear how he became an entrepreneur and developed something called Toprasin. It's used in veterans' hospitals and otherwise. So I think you'll find this very interesting. If you know of anybody that suffers from pain, you're going to want to listen to this show on Monday. It's an amazing story. And then we are going to be talking with Alicia Evans, Walk in Sync. This is all about dogs, and it's just wonderful. She has wonderful videos. We have all kinds of good things that we're going to share with you about training a dog, etc. And this is a woman entrepreneur, and she's absolutely delightful. I met her when I was in New York, and I'm just so pleased that she's able to join me. Then, on Wednesday of next week, we're going to be talking with Ken Salzman, Child of My Child. This is going to be a dedication to grandparents. This is poetry. It's absolutely wonderful what Ken has been able to collect in the way of stories, so we're going to be sharing that with you. On Thursday, we're going to be talking with Riz Mirza. We're going to be talking about how Riz is a channel for Red Eagle. The publication is called Red Eagle Speaks, so we're going to be hearing a fascinating story. And then on Friday, a week from today, we'll be talking about Entrepreneur Equation by Carol Roth. Those of you that really want to be in business for yourselves and want to know how to deal with it in a down-to-earth, realistic way, you never went to college, you have no clue about economics or other aspects of working with a business, this book, all you'd have to do is really pay attention to what's in it, and you would be off to a good start. So we've got a dynamic, very diversified lineup, as it typically is the case with the Donna Sebo Show. So I hope you'll tell your friends and that you'll be able to tune in and listen. I wanted to share this story with you. There was an individual who had a very, very fine friend who was a marvelous potter, just absolutely fabulous potter. And this gal would go to watch her friend as she would turn the potter's wheel with her foot pedals and would have this blob of clay just slapped down in the water bowl next to her so she can keep the clay wet as she's turning that potter's wheel. And she was just mesmerized by what her friend was able to do. So one day when she was visiting with her, she asked her, "Do you know what you're going to make?" And her friend said that as a potter, what she had discovered about herself was when she would be rested and was in harmony with herself, she found that her pottery seemed to take on a life of its own. She would be able to sculpt and develop beautiful, beautiful pieces of property. But when she got tired, she said, my pottery just didn't seem to have the life in it. I just couldn't get that wet clay to do what I wanted it to do. So then what I do is just make something simple, everyday items, like maybe a bowl or a very simple pitcher that someone could use. The potter, when talking about this, said what she had come to recognize is when she was relaxed and in harmony with herself, she found she had the ability to focus and the patience to make what she deemed beautiful items. And she said many times when she would be in the process of making an item and she'd watch the way the clay was moving, she'd get the feel for it, it just wasn't right, she would absolutely crush whatever she had done. She'd crush it right down into a blob on that potter's wheel. And then start over. And there was that need for patience, because if any of you have ever worked with clay, you know how it has, you have to have the feel for it. You have to know when some sections are too thin or if it's too thick. You have to have a balance. If you're especially dealing with creating a neck that might be a vase of some kind, it takes a great deal of thoughtfulness and patience, and you have to be meticulously patient so that it will turn out the way that you want. Obviously, that's what you did, and that's why she could break it down and just know she could continue to go on. When she was tired, she said, I don't focus very well, and I have no patience. So I know I'm going to make mistakes, and then I say, okay, I'll deal with what is not going to require the level of precision and concentration that's necessary. And the moral of this story that I'm sharing with you is, just like a caller earlier who had been dealing with some issues, causing a lot of stress, sometimes we just need to back off. Sometimes we maybe just need to take a nap or walk around a block and realize that we may not be able to handle something appropriately because we're not rested or we're not relaxed. We're working too hard at something. It's an amazing process, and I think we just have to live it and experience it so that we can become aware of ourselves as individuals. And it's okay to get tired. It's okay to want to step away from something, but when you are rested and you're together, and you make a point of taking care of yourself, you're going to find your life is going to be a lot more effective. You're going to find your communication with people is going to be a lot richer. You're going to find that you won't get agitated and aggravated the way you would otherwise. Now, we're heading into a marvelous weekend. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I want you to really have a good, good time. And don't forget to hug those that you love. And remember those four-legged creatures or fluffy feathered creatures that might be your pets. Remember, everything in life has a gift to give you. Believe it or not. But it's going to be up to you as to whether you're willing to accept the gift that it gives you. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent weekend, and we'll be back here, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.